This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
My view was it was a penalty from where I was stood. I thought Douglas had got too tight with Pogba and he went down. But I've just gone in the dressing room and seen it back, and there's a lot of doubt. I think he's tripped himself up, similar to Douglas when he was running back in the first half, tripped himself up. And for me, there's enough doubt there and to send him over to the screen. He doesn't get sent over to the screen, so confused, but I feel he trips himself over. Dubious penalty has lost us the game.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast, the Aston Villa podcast that hates Manchester United more than anybody else. I'm David Michael, the editor of MyOldManSaid.com. Joining me to discuss our latest, how would you describe it, painful experience?
Frustrating this time, not so much painful.
Frustrating. I'm angry though, I'm angry.
Very angry.
Our latest attempt at taking 3 points off the Manx, Mr. Chris Bird, welcome into 2021.
Hello, hello. Thank you very much. Happy New Year. I fucking hate them, by the way.
And welcome to Mr. Shaw, who I know really hates them.
Oh, yes. I hate them badly. It's like the knife has went in and broken off and you can never take it out.
And it's rusty.
Yeah.
Yes, this podcast has three people who really don't like Manchester United. So get ready. It's the first one of 2021. We left 2020 trending at number 24 on the Spotify trending chart in the UK, whatever that's all about. So I think it officially makes us trendy. And that's like 24 out of every podcast that exists in the world. So 24... I think on the stats, there's around just under a million active podcasts at the moment. So that's not bad.
And that's just Villa ones?
No, it isn't. Although it does seem like there are a million Villa podcasts. That is like every podcast out there currently. So we walk into 2021 trendy at least. Hopefully we've upgraded now to a podcast that talks about a top half team. But I think on the evidence of the United game, I think we will finish top half, but I don't think we'll be winning the league just because you can tell, can't you, when you get the rubber, the green, especially when it comes down to penalties. Anyway, how are you feeling for 2021?
A lot more positive than we were this time last year, but then little did we know that, you know, a few weeks after going and beating Burnley and losing big Wes and Heaton that we wouldn't even be able to go to games. Well, it's been one of the biggest turnarounds in certainly my time supporting Villa in the best part of like 30 years. It's quite a dramatic upturn, isn't it, in a relatively short space of time. Long may that continue.
Yeah, considering it was literally a ongoing circus with various new owners coming in, and then we're almost within the space of a year, we've gone from zeros to heroes.
And heroes that everybody else likes as well. We're entertaining heroes.
Yeah, we're getting recognised for good things rather than just being diabolical. Right, coming up in this show, we do the autopsy on the Manchester United game. Also, we will look at the recent Villa news going into 2021 and the 3 points. Take in what Mr. Jose Mourinho has been saying, what Messi's been up to, and also what Leeds United have been doing on their social media. And the over or underrated, the first one of the year, we've gone with the Manchester United connection. We'll be discussing the merits of Mr. Jemba Jemba.
No merits.
Yeah, I was waiting for somebody to question the word merits. Right, Villa News. Not a lot happening. Obviously, we've had the holiday season. The first main thing is finally that game that was meant to kick off this season. The trip to Manchester City has been rescheduled, and in a month that we already had 5 league games and a cup game, now we've got all in 7 games. We've played one obviously against Manchester United. Now we have to play Manchester City on January the 20th, which is a Wednesday, 8:15 on BT Sport. Just add into the toughness of this month. This is the month that will define us, will it not, in terms of where we end up?
You would think so, yeah, just because the calibre of, you know, opposition we've got back to back to back, and the fact that we've got, you know, a pretty incessant schedule. You know, having to play, obviously, so starting the year against United, you're going to have to play City, Spurs, and a much improved Everton team. Then a couple of tricky little trips, aren't there, as well? I think it's Southampton and Burnley as well.
You're basically playing two teams that you've already played and failed to beat. Also, it was announced, I think it was last week, that Kalinic has agreed to go off on loan to Hajduk Split, where he actually first got kind of recognised initially, which something that you normally do for sentimental reasons at the end of your career. So this is going a bit early for him at his age to be going almost back to ground zero to start his career again. But we'll see what happens there. And the third and final piece of Villa news of any worth is the fact that Wesley seems to be a lot of in-house publicity on the Villa's social channels and website. Wesley in training, Wesley doing interviews, Wesley with a new haircut. Now, that would suggest that he is incoming soon, but as we've seen with Ross Barkley, which we'll discuss shortly, when it seems that a player's coming back doesn't necessarily mean he will be back. But hopefully Big Wes gets back soon, because I think we need him. It'd be good to, at least even if he's just making contributions for 10, 15 minutes off the bench initially, would be useful in this month of January.
It's just having another option, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you certainly wouldn't waste the money on the hair dye, on beard dye, if you weren't close to coming back.
Yeah, well, we hope not. Right, let's get on to the 3 points. First point, I quite like Jose Mourinho's comments about the Fulham Spurs game being postponed. It was literally 3 hours before the kickoff, was it not? They were kind of sitting
really
around
last minute. Yeah,
yeah. Where he put it on Instagram and he signed off with "best league in the world" as a sarcastic jibe to what he considered as unprofessional behaviour. I mean, our game against Newcastle and Everton, Manchester City, They were postponed because of positive COVID-19 cases, but with a lot more notice. I can't quite believe why the Fulham players were tested so close to the game. If it's like a routine test, surely it's like the day before or something.
Yeah, the whole thing's just a bit shambolic, or the fact that surely you would know about this stuff much sooner in advance than 6 o'clock. It's just shambolic.
Because, you know, if they are positive, then you've got to take appropriate action. You can't be like testing players, getting results back a few hours before the bloody kickoff. It's a bit of a weird one. But this round of Premier League testing, 18 players and strict staff tested positive, which is the highest amount since the tests begun. This prompted Big Sam Allardyce to call for a 2-week circuit breaker. I think that's just because he wants to buy time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's like, oh shit, what have I... Okay, I'm banking a bit of cash here from West Brom, but this actually is a shit show I've kind of signed up for here. 2-week break from the baggies is what he's after, essentially. I mean, another example, Lincoln City, who are top of League One. Woohoo! Their manager, Michael Appleton, and goalkeeping coach, they both tested positive as well for COVID. So this is something that's happening, let's say, a little bit more frequent than you would like in the football pyramid. I mean, everybody seems to suggest that football's set up for, you know, a robust testing system and all the protocol that's actually in place.
I think the thing with Jose was that there was no indication of how many Fulham players or staff or anything were actually affected by this. You know, like Man City had made it clear that this is spread through the training ground. Newcastle had said this is a real problem for us, and it had been coming on for a reasonable period of time. Fulham, it was kind of like no one really knows if it's one player and we really don't fancy the game today. It's a very strange one that there was the lack of disclosure, really. And that's what a lot of managers, I think David Moyes had come out and said it, you know, he had to have a couple of guys for a game a few weeks ago out of the team because they tested positive. But he just said we had to get on with the game. You know, the ruling says, was it you have to have a minimum of 14 to fulfil the match?
Bottom line is, if they did Project Restart, then they'll definitely continue at the moment. It's all about fulfilling multi-million pound contracts. So yeah. At the moment, it will continue. Number two, the footballing world has been congratulating Lionel Messi and recently for breaking Pelé's record of 643 goals for one club.
Budweiser sent a bottle of beer for every goal that Messi had scored against them to select goalkeepers around the world, and some of them did quite well out of it. Diego Alves got 21 and Iker Casillas got 17. Now, I know Casillas has had heart problems, but I'm sure 17 buds, it could be tempting at this time of year.
Yeah, and hasn't Pelé's club, Santos, they published a detailed account explaining why Messi hadn't actually broken his record.
Santos are trying to count Messi's goals in friendlies towards his Santos total, so that has added 448 goals to the total.
Yeah, I remember interviewing Pelé when he released this one of them, you know, hundred of documentaries about him. It's meant to be the definitive one, and I remember discussing that and that cropping up where they, you know, didn't have footage for all because he wanted footage of every goal he scored, and he was saying, well, a lot of them are friendly, so they struggled. I think Zico had the same thing. I mean, these teams, they got to realize that friendlies, the goals don't count. It's as simple as that. So it's bit of a strange one that they're flagging that up.
Yeah, I'm still looking for footage of many of the goals that I scored over my career as well.
In friendlies. Point number three, it's just like there's always a Twitter shitstorm about something. Kieran Carney got singled out by Leeds' in-house social media team where they had a picture of her and basically put the emoji stroking the chin of what she'd said about them on Amazon Prime, saying promoted because of COVID in quote marks. Then they put a smiley face, won the league by 10 points, and then hi, Prime Video Sport. This is, I just think it's lowbrow shithousery from Leeds United because they did the same with Gabby. They just took his tweets, and then when they beat us 3-0, threw them out. And I'm not into companies, which they are, trying to have this kind of personality for engagement because it always bites you in the backside. But in this situation, they've just set her up for a pile on, and she deleted her Twitter account after 3 days of this message going up. And I think it was just unfortunate wording by her that they could pull out the quote promoted because of COVID, because she had a valid point. You know, she said they outrun everyone and credit to them. My only concern would be they blow up at the end of the season, which is a proven fact. You know, as she continued to say, we saw that the last couple of seasons, I actually think they got promoted because of COVID in terms of it gave them a bit of a respite. I don't know if they would have got up if they didn't have that break. I mean, in the season that we got up in the playoffs, we should have been playing them in the final. Where the fuck were they? Because they just self-destructed against Derby. Now, even though they were looking reasonable, you wouldn't back, you know, you wouldn't necessarily lump on them getting promoted. And she was right in what she said. And it's not as if it wasn't rocket science. Other people had thought that. And, you know, I distinctly remember thinking that when COVID broke out and I looked at the league table and I thought this actually benefits Leeds for the way they play.
Yeah, the whole thing's just small time. And then for their chairman as well to come out and say, I take full responsibility for the club tweet. I consider the comment completely unnecessary and disrespectful. I mean, you don't see chairman of any big clubs even going anywhere near Twitter, let alone commenting something as small as that.
I mean, if she'd been malicious to them and said, oh, you know, Bielsa, what's he fucking won? They only got promoted because of COVID. Then, you know, fair enough, have a go back. But this was just analysis and a valid point. And it is just small time. I mean, you can sometimes criticise a club for being a bit bland, and everybody gives them props if they do actually say something funny, but don't get small time like this. It just reeks of just some fucking marketing prick wearing whatever the fashionable shoe is at the moment, whether it's monk strap or Chelsea boots, wearing their like drain pipe trousers, all these like marketing clones, and they're trying to have a personality through fucking social media. The problem with football, and a lot of football fans don't really see it from where you look at football, but behind the scenes it's just getting increasingly all about data and marketing, and these people don't really have a football soul.
I'll keep it simple. It's Leeds United acting like pricks for a change.
Oh yeah, or that Buddhism. Right, before we crack on to the Manchester United game, I just want to say a big thank you to all of my Man City patrons who have supported us in the difficult year of 2020. We will be revamping things for this year with an extra channel of podcast offerings rather than just ad hoc extra shows, as well as Match Club, which continues on strongly and has been a bit of a saving grace for this behind the closed doors football. I mean, speaking personally as well, but it has actually been genuinely a good experience. So thank you all for being involved with that. If you want to become a My Old Man Said patron and support us in 2021 and join in with Match Club and get access to the extra podcast channel as well, please go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the patron link to see the details there. Thank you very much to Dom, who signed up on an annual membership. If you sign up as an annual patron, you save 2 months. I think it's 15%. And also thank you to Adam, Up Richard, and Sean Barnes for joining as normal patrons as well over the Christmas period. Thank you very much. Right, Manchester United match reaction. First thing, I've been looking forward to this game all Christmas because I thought, finally, Barkley's going to be back. We'll take them on. Mings is back. Barkley's back. Full strength. Let's have you. First thing, Barkley wasn't there, not even on the bench. So you're thinking, what the hell's going on? Because he didn't play against West Brom because apparently it was too cold, and they didn't want to risk him because it was too cold. Then Smith said he was definitely playing against Crystal Palace, and then he wasn't there. Luckily, I mean, this kind of level of opponents, we've got by without him. And then so you expect him, because he's had an extra game's rest, because obviously he can't figure for the Chelsea game, and then a no-show for the Manchester United game, and you're thinking, well, actually, these are the games that we actually need him for and why we're paying exorbitant wages. And now he's missed more games than he's actually played for us. Any comments about this? I mean, Smith has said after this game, and I mean, the reaction to this quote from most fans has been, you know, believe it when we see it now, is that he will play against Spurs. But, you know, that's it's a week or so away. Frustrating?
Yeah, I think so. It was I understand if you want to ease a player, especially a player of Barkley's caliber, back, and you think we don't want to take any risks. I totally respect that. Yeah. But if you just be blunt about it and say before the Man United game, when asked, is it too soon for Ross? All you have to go is, yeah, I think it might be a bit too soon, and then the fans go, all right, fair enough. Yeah, you don't have to give the game away.
There's a philosophy that says, well, you keep the opponents guessing, but you're going back to West Brom, and you're saying. When you're saying that, yeah, it's a bit cold, we didn't want to risk it, that means, okay, they're going to, he's in the next game. Are you going to play this game? Because we've seen it before from Villa with Grealish, with McGinn. And we're not talking about, you know, days. We're talking about weeks and months here.
Mm-hmm. When it happened, the first thing in your head was, I hope that's not a bad one, even the minor one. It's going to be 6 weeks. Smith comes straight out and says, oh, it's going to be a couple of weeks. It's just a tweak. I mean, he didn't need to say anything. He just needed to say, yeah, we'll monitor it or something like that.
Yeah.
Just saying nothing's better than saying anything.
Because there is a two-way thing. It's like, yes, okay, you want to keep the opponents guessing, but also the fans. I mean, luckily here, we're not paying money to see, you know, to see these games in the flesh. So you mainly go and see your club, but you know, sometimes you might, if you're a more casual fan and you're wanting to go and see Barkley, you're thinking, well, he's definitely playing in the United game or the Palace game, and you pay your ticket money and go. But I was pissed off when I found out he wasn't in the team, because you were led down the path to suggest that he was there. Anyway, so without him, I mean, you're thinking we're looking, you know, we're still all right. We're a cut above what we used to be. But I was thinking, I don't think we beat United today without him. That was my, and the same against Chelsea. I think we beat Chelsea if Barkley plays. Obviously, he couldn't play because it's his parent club. So that's the kind of level that Barkley takes us, and how he was interacting with Grealish to get that crazy result against Liverpool and to beat Arsenal convincingly. He takes you up that level where you can take these teams on head to head. I mean, we gave Manchester United a good ride for their money, but it's just that little extra cutting edge quality, as Alan Hansen used to say, that can get you the result.
If it does, it does. You can imagine the lift it gives to the opposition as well, and they see things like that. I mean, United probably were preparing all week for Barkley to be playing, unless there's text messages and backhand things going on.
Yeah, so from their point of view, they don't mind either way, really, because they're ready for him, but then they get a lift if he's not there. It's not as if, oh no, we've been wrong-footed. Well, how are we going to beat Villa now? Because we've prepared for Barkley. It's like, well, they're not as good without him, so... It's kind of a kidology that doesn't really work in the end. Anyway, getting into the game, I think we were kind of slow starters in this.
Yeah, I think the way United set up, it's strange. It's quite basic. It's I said in Match Club, it's United are so pacey across the whole team that they can afford to like drop off, or they can afford to even, you know, make a mistake or lose ball, because the pace up front and midfield just gets them out of any trouble. So it's not that Villa couldn't get near them, it's United didn't bother going near Villa because they knew whenever they had to, they just, you know, turned on the afterburners and just sped up a bit, and that was it. It was a strange first, you know, 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, they you could tell United didn't necessarily want to commit too many forward, but actually Villa allowed them to, because our passing in the first sort of 10, 15 minutes was a bit scratchy at best. And we kept getting caught in transition, which, I mean, that was a problem when we played them in the, you know, the 3-0 defeat back in the summer. Yeah. And you always thought Man U would probably have an extra gear, which they did go through at certain points throughout the game. But you never thought Man U had really, really concerted pressure for longer than sort of 5-minute spells, but they almost didn't need to. You almost felt they had that little bit of bite in their attack that at any given point they can go through a gear and then hurt you, and then the day after they can pull back. I thought Villa had to play a slightly more controlled game, which took sort of 15 minutes or so to actually grow into the game. But I think once we actually grew into the game, got our foot on the ball and started passing it around and trying to play our way, I thought we looked pretty good. I think there was a McGinn chance relatively early on, after Manu had a couple of half chances and stuff. He thought, okay, we're in the game here. We can actually hurt them. And you know, that was the first of Matty Cash's great deliveries, of which he would have probably two or three through the game. He had a really good game.
Just to give a bit of context, I mean, Manchester United have lost just one of their last 43 Premier League games against Villa. That's won 31, drawn 11. And they're unbeaten in the last 15 since a game I actually went to, the Villa 1-0 Gabby winner in December 2009. But it was interesting, like Solskjaer mentioned pre-match, the friendly that we beat them in, because they put out a decent team. So he knew early doors that this was a different kind of animal, and would have, you know, accorded us respect. And what I was surprised once Villa got into the game was how much Cash and Target were actually getting purchase and getting up and attacking, and some of our best stuff was actually coming from our fullbacks getting in advanced positions.
I think United flooded the middle of the park. You know, you saw in the team selection, Manu had made changes and brought Fred and McTominay in to just sit and to try and deal with what Louise, Jack and McGinn would sort of bring through the middle of the park, which probably freed up a little bit of space out wide for the two fullbacks. I think our two wingers were probably pushed on. It was almost like a front three at times. But as you said, certainly Cash and Target, they always had an overlap.
Yeah.
Just looking at it, I mean, I don't think it's a tactical masterclass from Solskjaer at all. The amount of times that Maguire or any of their players just got the ball and hoofed it up front, knowing that they've Martial and Rashford to just latch onto something and take them.
They've always got an out ball, haven't they?
Yeah, they've always got an out ball. I mean, as well, I mean, you've seen Pogba and Fernandes dropping deep, and even they were smashing the ball. Maybe a bit unkind to say hoof when it's those two doing it, because they were playing ping balls into the corners, and you just seen United get advancing up the pitch, just playing like percentage football, just doing whatever they had to win.
I mean, they are ridiculously fast. You don't really notice them until you're playing against them. And, you know, Rashford also, half of it, he's going through past players and you would say it's dribbling, but it's like, I don't know, FIFA, where you've just got somebody who's got like speed 100 and you notice it as soon as he gets the ball. It's like different level.
Well, we saw that for the opening goal, didn't we? You know, we had a free kick in a promising position, made a complete hash of it. During the breakaway, they go pop, 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 two or three passes. You know, Rashford, I think it is, with a great touch, frees up Wan-Bissaka, who's also very quick, gets into a good position. Obviously, Mings misses his header and the ball ends up in the net. You know, they turn defence into attack, you know, very quickly. And they know that Villa can do the same. So it was always going to potentially be a bit of a, you know, a bit of a game of pinball, which it was at times, which made for quite a good game.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Because in the early stages, I thought he shepherded Watkins pretty well. Dealt with him. But Jack had 83 touches, which is back to what he was doing, like in the Championship, for example, seeing a lot more of the ball. He's normally about 60% of that in the Premier League so far this season. So a lot was coming through Jack just because he had that freer role centrally. And I think that's why they flooded the midfield in their setup initially, to obviously stifle him wherever he would pop up. And he was popping up on the right quite a lot. Obviously, last time we played them, he had success on the left-hand side. But the good news is when we went 1-0 down was, again, like against Chelsea, was the reaction. You didn't feel like it was game, set, and match over, as it has been in, you know, previous encounters with them in recent years, where, you know, once the first goal goes in, the dam is broken.
No, I mean, that's one of the big things we spoke about previously, you know, after Chelsea and other moments through the season, is that this version of Villa, you always feel that they're still in the game.
Yeah,
because we've always got a chance, and generally speaking, we've always got a goal in us. You know, it's very seldom we fail to score.
Yeah, I mean, we were down from our average this season in terms of shots, but still 14 away at Old Trafford is 5 on target compared to their 19 shots, 9 on target is decent. I mean, that's like, you know, it's a kind of a 50-50-ish, we had more possession than them, slugfest.
Yeah, certainly in the second half, especially where it was really, you know, end to end. It was a cracking half of football, the second half.
You could see our goal as well, quick thinking from a quick free kick. And Traore had an identical chance that he missed against Burnley. So he's learnt, and, you know, take the shot quicker whenever it comes to you at the back, even if you do have to stop it with your right before putting it in with your left. So
yeah,
it's a good sign that he's learning.
Apart from that free kick that he took, which I'm still trying to work.
It's still in the air.
Still trying to work out what he was doing, because we actually, you know, free kick on the edge of the box, we flooded the box, you know, for you just blast it as hard as you can, grass cutter in the front, you know, probably level with his 6-yard box and see what happens. But it was, he had a bit of a rush to the head. But, you know, this is the difference of a team that's at the real top, and one that's probably just going to finish in the top half, is you've got to take chances like that, or at least, you know, ask questions from those situations. Because we have been reckless in moments in that game when we've actually done the hard work.
I think that's one of the things that the Smith will take out of it, and unfortunately he's taken from other games, and it's the main reason why we... The reality is we probably won't be in that upper echelon of the table come the end of the season, because we do have that individual error in us. We do have that tendency sometimes to play ourselves into trouble. And while, you know, there has been clearly, you know, huge progress, and there's the overall picture for Villa is clearly one of being very positive, there we do still have that knack, don't we, of sort of just hitting the self-destruct button. And even if it's only for a split second, unfortunately, with the calibre of attacking players we're coming up against at the moment, you are going to get punished. And unfortunately, we do, which is unfortunate for someone like Martinez, you know, who had yet another great game and wasn't at fault for either of the goals.
The first goal, Ming's misjudgment.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
The way he ended up, he obviously missed it, but it's all about, you know, positioning and reading what's happening there. I think he's getting a lot of stick. Just casually glancing on social media.
I think that's just social media, isn't it?
You make one mistake, it just gets heightened.
I think it's because he's had the odd mistake in him so far, and he's considered one of the talisman players for the club. But all of a sudden, Courtney Hawes has come into the team and done pretty well. It's kind of like, well, hang on a minute, earn your place back, which I see both sides of it. But the reality is, Mings is the senior player. You're not going to drop him if he's fit, are you?
Yeah. Somebody raised the question, Match Club, would you have kept Hawes in? I said, no, I would have been surprised if Mings wasn't in that first 11.
Plus, with the other games coming up, I think the reality is Hawes will play in the cup game against Liverpool.
Yeah, if anything, when Mings makes these mistakes, he's trying to get too technically good a header in that ball. I mean, he's twisted his body, he's bent down and everything else, and he's just got his head into the right position to do that. But by the time he's done that, the ball just misses it by a split second. You know, if he'd have moved across, got his chest in the way or something like that, or just, you know, got anything in front of it instead of trying to get it clear perfectly each time. It's just, you know, it's decision making.
Yeah, but I mean, I think, you know, his header's at the other end. You could point the blame more there. There was a few headed chances, to be specific, throughout the game. I mean, we joked that Courtney Hawes was very good at winning the header, but in terms of where the header went, he had a bit of a 50p head. But some of the directing of the headers, I think Watkins had a good chance, Mings also. Davis is probably a bit of a 50-50 one. But on another day, you know, one of those might have ended up in the back of the net. I think De Gea made a few good saves, actually. He made as many saves as Martinez did.
I mean, the save from Watkins from point blank range is a brilliant save.
Yeah, then there's one from Cash at the end when we were searching for the equaliser.
I actually thought both keepers played pretty well for the most part. I don't think either of them were at fault for the goals.
Yeah, but yet again, I mean, a decent game of football was kind of thrown on its head. And this is something as the videos come out, that when Luke Shaw blazes into the box earlier on, Pogba's signalling to him to, you know, if you get into that position, just dive. And that's caught on camera. And then, you know, you only have to go forward a few minutes and Pogba's in the box. And this is my reading from watching that video so many times. He moves his leg out and brushes the back of Luiz's leg to establish contact. And then that leg trips his own leg off and he goes down. And these things, if you play them in slow motion, you can obviously create the narrative. But it looks like he's created that. And it's like something you train for. And if you look at the Manchester United stats and how many penalties they've got, they're way up there. And I think they're looking for these. And you could tell by Pogba's sign to Shaw earlier on that it's like, you know, it's almost like, you know, remember, if you get in this position, go down. Because what they've been doing that all season.
Well, they've been doing it for a couple of seasons, haven't they?
Mm-hmm. He just bounces his leg off Luiz. That's what it does. Bounce it off Luiz and then throw it behind Mayo and down a go.
Luiz is not the proactive or, you know, the aggressor or the instigator in any of this conversation.
Unfortunately, because he's so close to Pogba, he's kind of allowed himself, and this is kind of what Smith said, you know, because Smith said he thought it was a penalty straight away because Luiz had got so close to him. He's allowed himself to get suckered in. And then, of course, when that happens, the cliche thing of, well, you're giving the referee a decision to make. And normally when it comes to Man United at home, he's going to give it. Well, then, of course, he sees it on the replay and it looks shambolic.
Yeah. And the more, you know, the more you look at it, the more shambolic it is. And this is a whole idea of what VAR, you know, because in the moment, it could look like a penalty, and that's the whole idea of VAR
yeah,
is
absolutely.
You're meant to look at it and go, nah, yeah, that's
full,
not a penalty.
At full speed, it all looks a bit clumsy, doesn't it?
Or at least, you know, get to the monitor. You need to take a second look at that.
I think it's just a shame, though, to you know, to go to Old Trafford when you know Villa have had a number of difficult away trips already, you know, the first half of the season, and done really, really well. And we've said this in various games, that if you lose to a worldie, like, for example, at Chelsea, you know, if that Chilwell volley in the last minute goes in, you go, you hold your hands up and go, fair play. You know, if Pogba pings one in from 30 yards or they have a 20, 30 pass move that cuts you open or whatever it may be, you kind of go, fair play, man. But when you've lost to a very avoidable counter-attack goal from your own attacking position, and it's a pretty shambolic piece of defending, let's be frank, and then with a crappy VAR decision, when United had more than enough good chances and where, you know, Martinez has made good saves, you just sort of think, well, lose a game in a manner that isn't quite so frustrating. Lose to a moment of excellence.
And obviously following on from our previous encounter with them, when they got another dubious penalty, which at that time, I think it was 0-0, was it not? And
it
we
was,
were
yeah,
very,
that,
very much in the game and playing pretty well.
And Villa lost their heads.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see the penalty in this game. I wouldn't say it was as bad because I think we are mentally a much stronger team now, but you could see it rocked Villa and they were clearly very frustrated through the game. I mean, I think it was Matic, wasn't it? He had about 10 fouls on Grealish before he got a yellow card.
And there was a period of about 10 minutes where they were creating chances and it just looked like it was going to be 3-1 and game over. But then Villa managed, as you said, you know, they're a bit more mature now, mentally stronger, and they managed to turn the tide. And, you know, they looked like they were the ones that were going to get the equaliser if anybody was going to score.
And that's what you take from the game, isn't it? Ultimately, you'll take the positives, and Smith will. Luckily, they've got, you know, a 7-day break, isn't it, now? And they'll analyse the good things they did, but they do still need to be that little bit more clinical defensively, I would say.
And also in attack. And that's why I was a bit pissed that Barkley wasn't there, because I think he brings that to you.
Yeah. Well, he's a goal threat. And also, I think he gives you that little bit more control of the ball. I always thought Jack had a really, really good game. But you almost thought if he had someone to scheme with a little bit more, because Louise was playing a bit deeper and McGinn was sort of running around and he was having to put, you know, a lot of miles in. If Jack had someone to just bounce off a bit more, you'd actually think he could have probably caused him a few more problems. Because I still think, as much as Man United have got a lot of firepower, I think they're there for the taking. Like pretty much, let's be frank, every team in the league this year, I don't think anybody's particularly great defensively. We're actually one of the better defensive teams.
Yeah, I think McGinn was having a good first hour, at least, where, you know, he was bossing the United midfield and giving them, you know, problems in terms of United trying to get any kind of foothold in there.
Yeah, he's really found his real nasty streak, hasn't he, in the last few weeks? And you've sort of seen him doing the physical, the dirty stuff really, really well. You know, I mean, I think he really relished the battle with, you know, McTominay and Fred, and then he was the battle he had one-to-one with Pogba was great to watch at times.
Sorry, just going back to the penalty, it's quite funny what Gary Neville saying that was poor from Louise. I mean, I think football can be subjective, but that was definitely Manchester United goggles on there.
The only person it was poor from was the PGMOL Muppet that was in charge, Michael Oliver, again. I mean, This is where it gets you. It's the consistency, because he was the referee in charge of the Brighton game at Villa whenever he gave the penalty for Trezeguet and then went over to the monitor and changed his mind. I mean, it's at Old Trafford. The monitor must be broken.
That was the interesting one, wasn't it, actually? That, I mean, we're not going to dwell on this, but the fact that he didn't actually go and have a look at it.
Yeah.
You know, it was actually cleared quite quickly. I refer back to the Palace Boxing Day decision, which was a fantastic refereeing decision, I think. That was how they used the technology superbly. It was a very tight decision. He thought he'd made the right decision, and he confirmed it. Was normally when they go to the monitor, you think it's going to get overturned and a penalty will be given. And you thought, actually, if he'd have gone and had a look, you think, would he have stood with his decision then?
Yeah. Probably not. Smith wasn't happy with the first half in his post-match. He said we were miles off the levels where we have been. It felt like a testimonial pace. Then they deservedly had the lead at half-time. I told the players they needed to be upping our levels. I think that was kind of fair. Although I was, as we mentioned, I thought the fullbacks were doing very well in terms of getting forward, because it's not like the old days where you know your fullbacks have got to be a bit more conservative because you're very wary of the United attacking threat. We just took the game to them at times. And each team had periods of, you know, 10, 15 minutes where they seemed to be in control, and they had to use those periods to actually win the game. And in the end, all United did was, forge that penalty, which Smith described as dubious, and that was the clinching moment. We didn't take advantage when we had control.
No, and then you've seen from, what, about 80 minutes on or so, you could have been playing against a Ferguson United team that just shut the game down, rotated fouls.
You know, Matic comes on, you know that's what they're going for. My only gripe was we had a few, last 5 minutes at least we were pushing it. We had a few corners. Would you have put Martinez up there in the mixer? I was quite surprised he didn't go up for the corner like later on, like injury time.
Probably the pace of Rashford and Martial, you wouldn't be going too far because they only need to get the ball in their own half anywhere. Nobody's catching them.
Yeah, but it's like it's double a quit, so isn't it? Because you're losing anyway, so it doesn't matter if they score another one. That was my only thought then, was like, if you're really, really chasing it, you throw your keeper up there as well.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like Schmeichel used to do, isn't it? I mean, I don't mind that. I think, you know what, go for broke. If you lose 3-1, you're going to lose anyway.
Yeah.
I think Villa tried to do it a few times, but I just thought, just put it under the goalkeeper. You know, De Gea does have a flap in him at times. And I thought, you know, for the number of set pieces we had, and we did have a lot. And
we did waste them.
And we were so wasteful. You know, Cash put a brilliant ball in. There were a couple of really good ones, but then there was also some absolute garbage, especially in the first half.
Yeah, that Traore one being the highlight of
them all. And that's the one thing that I think last season what we found, especially after Project Restart, was when you needed something to happen, that's where you call on Hourihane.
Yeah.
Because his set-piece delivery, he has that knack of giving you something a little bit different. I don't necessarily think Man United is the game for him because I think the pace of it can pass him by. But when you're chasing the game and you need to make something happen, why not? Compared to sort of Jacob Ramsey, I think, you know, Hourihane, if you get a set piece in a good position and he's a goal threat, and if he gets a chance, you'd fancy him to bury it himself. And I just think, why not for 10 minutes?
Because the interesting thing is with Hourihane, I mean, you suggested there he's not up for the pace of it. When we played United at Old Trafford last time, you know, they still were a pacey team. And we actually controlled most of that game and looked great. And it's in the 2-2. And in the end, that you're kicking yourself for not winning that game. But Hourihane was part of that midfield, and we had dominated that game in midfield, which was a bit of a surprise at the time. So it's interesting how he's fallen so fast from grace. I mean, you know, Ross Barkley doesn't help, but, you know, he doesn't. Ross Barkley's been out for, was it 7 games now? And Hourihane has not even had a sniff.
Nope. I mean, I think the Liverpool, you know, the upcoming Liverpool Cup game could be really important for Hourihane, because if he doesn't get an opportunity or take that opportunity, he's going to find it very difficult once Barkley's back and now Ramsey's ahead of him to get a spot in the team.
I mean, if any player's still making a claim and they do what they did against Stoke in the League Cup, then they can forget about it. They do need to turn up in that game. Right. So any final words on this game?
No, it was just typical. It's just painful as ever playing United. I don't know whether it's a mental block when they see that badge or anything else. It's just the game always seems to, something like this always happens.
I mean, we did all say at the start of the season we really wanted to beat United at Villa Park, so I'll save that for later in the year. And if you're going to beat them, you want to do it when you can, like, really destroy their season.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, in front of a crowd, doesn't matter if it's home and away when there's no crowds in my book. But, I mean, the fact that we're angry about it was, it's kind of a positive. It's not like you're just shrugging your shoulders, because we know we're up another level now. We're, you know, we have expectations, and we go into games knowing that we've got a chance of winning. Like, if we were playing our full strength team in a cup competition, we know that we could probably take on anybody in this league, which is a big positive on, you know, in over 90 minutes, shall I say.
Yeah, and that's why I think January is going to be such an important month for the season, because I do think, and you've already said, that by the end of the month, I think you'll have a really good idea of where we're going to realistically be.
Yeah. Right, on to the first under or overrated of the year. I don't know how long we'll keep going with this section, but let's connect it to Manchester United. And this week's is Mr. Eric Jemba Jemba. Remember him?
Just about.
Mm-hmm. Struggling.
You didn't get the DVD compilation of all his appearances for Villa.
Funnily enough, no. It was the David O'Leary era, wasn't it? Which I've tried to erase from my mind, to be honest.
Yeah. Why did we buy Jemba Jemba? apart from we wanted to donate $1.5 million to Manchester United's Premier League winning campaigns?
Frankly, I have no idea.
This is like, what's it called? Wonderlust, Stardust, or where you think, oh, well, Alex Ferguson once bought him, so he can't be that crap. It just, you know, he's just not getting in that team because that team's too good. You know, Keane's keeping him out still. So I can see the Villa logic here. Oh, this is like a fringe player of Man United.
But he might come good here.
Yeah, because he'll get game time here. And, you know, you've had Alex Ferguson quoted as saying, you know, he's quick, aggressive and a good passer of the ball. He looks like a Manchester United player in every sense. And, I remember all the kerfuffle when we sign somebody. You know, there's always like quotes out of other players and other teams and managers talking about how great these players are. I mean, it's all fucking, you know, marketing to dupe the fans into the transfer. But in this case, it's like if we buy anybody from a top team, they must be a good player. It's almost a knee-jerk reaction. And we got completely suckered by this one.
Well, it was an era, wasn't it, where Doug Ellis had really, he was trying to sell the club at that point, and the money to spend was just not there. So the signings we had over a couple of seasons were truly woeful. This was an era of, like, you know, Gabor Kiraly and people like that. And we were just, it wasn't happening.
That was after, though.
It's the season after, yeah. But it was that era we just bought such uninspiring players. When you think back to, like, Eric Bakker and those.
Yeah, but this guy, Jemba, he was the new Roy Keane.
Mm. All right.
Allegedly.
I wonder what Roy Keane thought about that.
Yeah, he only played 11 games for Villa. I mean, for United, he played 20 league games, 39 in all, and probably a few substitute appearances in there, scored twice. But for Villa, he hardly featured at all. Was actually loaned out to Burnley at one stage, and then had his contract terminated, which is never a good sign. But at one stage, there was all this tabloid headlines that he was on 75k a week at United. Which I think it was a month, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was bollocks.
And then he had like 30 bank accounts and he had 10 cars and he was paying off so much debt that he had to rely on win bonuses and appearance fees. And obviously he wasn't getting those appearance fees because he wasn't playing. And, he was in a bit of a financial spiral. But then once he got Villa got rid of him, he just turned into probably the ultimate journeyman that I've ever seen when you look at his...
Globally.
Yeah, like insane. I mean, he went to Qatar, he went to Israel, Scotland with St Mirren, where he played like 2 games.
India,
Indonesia as well. I mean, the only team he ever got any traction with was he played for, is it Odense BK in Denmark, where he played over 100 games. And apart from that, he was just getting, less than 10 in the latter part of his career. Anyway, where is he now?
Well, some would say he's found his level. And looking at it, I'm thinking he's at my level as well. So he's the same
what
age.
What is your level, Phil?
Well, currently my level would probably be the fifth tier of Switzerland with FC Valorbe. Because he has just, and when he's talking about his playing ability at the minute, he just sounds like what I was like, even at my peak. He goes, I just love playing. And when I finish training, I'm happy to carry the balls and the water bottles. I mean, there's many a time I was carrying the water bottles.
bless him. But he still plays today. But I don't know if financially if he's getting anything from that. It's probably just to keep his head above water.
It's probably to keep his green card for Switzerland.
Yeah. But he's a bit of a, I think Jean Macoun too reminded me a bit of Jemba. He's that kind of, and even Carlos Sanchez to a certain extent, this kind of relaxed, deep-lying midfielder who's meant to be a bit of an enforcer, but they never really could sink into Villa's style or even the English game, I don't think. And I think Jemba's probably the worst of them all.
Yeah, so bad they named him twice.
So, underrated or overrated?
Overrated, man. Easy.
Fucking unrated.
The new Roy Keane, overrated. Right then, let's leave that there. It was just good to get him mentioned in the show.
Yeah, reminders of United shitting on us again.
Yeah, no, exactly. They're taking money from us.
Another raw deal.
The Red Devils. There's a reason why they have a devil. I think it's just aimed at Aston Villa, personally. I don't know if other teams have the same issues with them. I mean, I know Liverpool and Leeds don't like them, but surely they haven't suffered as much as Villa fans. Right, anyway, we will beat them at Villa Park. You heard it here first. Right, thank you very much for joining us. We will be back for all of the six other contests in the month of January. Until then, stay safe, stay hopeful, and let's hope 2021 is the year that 2020 wasn't. Until next time, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van, unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.